Underdog Nation, welcome in to another edition of the Underdog Dynasty Sunbelt Podcast. Matt Miguez here, your Louisiana writer. I am joined, as always, every week by Mr. Brian Stone, our Georgia Southern writer. Now, I know the last couple of weeks I have been MIA from this podcast. That has been due to my involvement in cleanup efforts for Hurricane Ida. Obviously, I continue, as well as many others at Underdog Dynasty, we continue to pray for everybody in Southeast Louisiana. With dealing with Hurricane Ida and the after effects of it. But Brian, first of all, good evening, man. How are you?
I'm doing well. I kind of just echo what you said about, you know, the cleanup efforts in Louisiana. So I hope everybody's, you know, doing well down there.
Yeah, man. You know, it's crazy. Everybody, you hear people that don't live in Louisiana ask you all the time, you know, why do you live in Louisiana if you're going to deal with hurricanes and you're going to deal with, you know, stuff like that? Man, I mean, everywhere else you go in the country, you're going to deal with a natural disaster. You live on the West Coast, you're going to deal with wildfires and earthquakes. If you live up north, you're going to deal with snowstorms. If you live in the Midwest, you're going to deal with tornadoes. I mean, it's a picky poison.
Yeah.
The Gulf Coast is a great place to live.
Yeah. I mean, you know, obviously, like, the water down there is awesome compared to, like, I used to live on, like, the coast of the Atlantic, and it's dirty.
Yeah.
That water is brown. So, at least, at the very least, in the Gulf Coast, you get some nice water. I told you this before we started recording. I've got an important update that I need to run by you, get your thoughts on.
Yeah, for sure.
So, whoever's editing this podcast, if you could just edit in like a little breaking news, like special report.
Yeah.
I have something I want to talk about really fast. There was a website called qualitylogoproducts.com, and they typically do products with custom embroidered whatever. But for some reason on this day, they decided to rank the creepiest mascots.
And wait, was Cayenne up there?
Let me finish. So, number one on the list was Purdue Pete.
I get that.
They said he had soulless eyes. 1,300 people got surveyed for this. Number two, Cayenne, the Red Hot Chili Pepper.
Yes, Cayenne, like the creepiest
mascot in America.
Man, we need to bring Cayenne back. It is a damn shame that we can't find somebody to put on that ugly-ass suit and rock it on Saturday. There's no reason. You can't tell me that there's not one person in this town of 130,000 that would wear it six Saturdays out of the year.
I actually hadn't really looked at it until I looked at the survey results. Now, I know he's supposed to be a chili pepper, but what he looks like is the devil had a baby with a tomato.
Oh, no. Oh, no. I mean, that's accurate. What he looks like. That's accurate.
That's what he looks like, in my opinion. So if anybody hasn't seen a picture of Cayenne that listens to this podcast, please go look him up and tell me if I'm wrong.
Man, we haven't had Cayenne. I want to say 2014 was the last year we had a Cayenne, because I'm looking at pictures. And Cayenne never wore an Adidas uniform.
And that's when you signed the Adidas deal?
Right. We signed the Adidas deal in 2015.
Mm-hmm.
So I think 2014 was the last year that we had Cayenne, which, again, is a damn shame. I know we had a push from our athletic director last year before, to try to get somebody to be it. But, man, like, every university should have a mascot.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it's a live one or somebody in a suit, everybody needs one.
Mm-hmm.
You guys have one at Georgia Southern, don't y'all? Don't y'all have an eagle?
We have both a mascot and a live bird.
And a live, okay. Yeah, you see?
Freedom. Oh, Freedom flies around the stadium before the game.
What a name. Man, I got to go catch a game down in Polson.
Well, I don't want to get too off the reservation here before we actually start talking about games, but Freedom is a bird that was rescued because its beak was broken. Like, and so we have multiple birds. So, like, the next one after Freedom passes, I guess, is going to be Glory. So they've all got really pro America names, but I'm all for there's that. A reason that they're there. You know what I mean?
Right. For sure. For sure. I love that. All right, man, this is mind blowing. We have games to talk about. We've been doing this podcast again for 2 months now, and we finally have games to discuss.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right. Let's start talking about them.
And you know, game number one, I don't really want to spend a whole lot of time on it. Coastal Carolina absolutely demolishes the Citadel, 52-14. Were you surprised? Mm-hmm.
Not in the slightest, to be totally honest. You know, Zeke, who did an admirable job filling in, you know, in your absence, talking about these teams and these games. I mean, we pretty much universally agreed. Like, the line on this one, I think the final line was 33. We were like, give it to me.
Yeah, I was about to say, they covered.
Yeah, and I was just like, there's no way that Coastal doesn't cover this game. So Grayson McCall completed like 85% of his passes, which is nuts, for 262 yards and a score. They had a lot of time where they were just leading and just kind of able to do whatever they wanted. So, no, I'm not, to answer your question, I'm not surprised in the slightest that this happened.
And you know, Shamari Jones, 9 carries, 100 yards, 2 touchdowns. And then I'm gonna Reese White, the backup running back, 7 carries, 62 yards, 2 scores as well. Just a ridiculous performance by the Chanticleers. The next game on that night, that Thursday, App State, East Carolina. Man, I'll tell you something. App State worries me more than Coastal Carolina does.
See, that's surprising because, I mean, outside of one hiccup last year at the end of the season against Liberty, I mean, Coastal Carolina was like a well-oiled machine the entire year.
Yeah, but they didn't really play anybody. Outside of us,
they beat BYU.
Yeah, but BYU wasn't really proven. Who'd BYU play? Who'd they play?
I mean, they played who they could, but also their quarterback was the number 2 pick in the NFL draft.
It's I'll give you that.
It's not like they were like, you know, a MAC school who was like beating up on other like lower tier G5 teams and then rolled in. I mean, they were ranked even. I mean, you can say what you want about.
I'll give you that. I don't know. I mean, and I don't want to take anything away from Coastal Carolina. They were impressive last year. However, just the way that App State took a decent East Carolina team, and yeah, I mean, the scoreboard shows 33-19, but anybody that watched that game knows that it was over long before that.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Chase Bryce kind of, good. Answered the questions that I had about him. I feel like those questions weren't unjustified either.
No, God, no.
Coming from Duke and not doing a whole lot, I mean, you kind of had to throw those out there just because there was always going to be a chance that. But I will say, we don't know what kind of team East Carolina is overall. I mean, the season could play out. They could be a terrible team. Like, we just have no idea. So that's kind of the problem with week one is, like, you know, we were really impressed last year when South Alabama beat Southern Miss in week one, and we thought that was going to kind of be a turning point for South Alabama, and then turned out Southern Miss just wasn't that good.
And so, lo and behold, I'm having the same thoughts about South Alabama after beating Southern Miss yet again.
Yeah, and I mean, it happens. You know, week one is like, it's very easy to get really caught up and be like a prisoner of the moment and say, wow, this win was so impressive that like, this team's just going to run the table and win it all, or, you know, whatever, even conference-wise. So, like, I will say they were a very impressive – it was a very impressive performance. Chase Bryce, 20 of 27 for 259, 2 touchdowns and 1 pick. They had 2 guys, Nate Noel and Cameron Peoples, each go over 100 yards rushing. We knew that they were going to have a great running game. They had great receivers. Hennigan, Sutton, Virgil, you know, all those guys. We knew that. My only question was, could the quarterback take them to the same level that a what was it, Taylor Lamb, Zach Thomas, like that type of level, and kind of answer those questions. I think that they're going to be a real threat in the Sun Belt for sure.
Yeah, no question about it. You know, looking at the game Saturday, I mean, I'll let you go ahead and open with game number one on the ESPN schedule.
Can I just say really quick one last thing about that East Carolina game? That running back that East Carolina has, I think his name's Keaton Mitchell.
Yeah.
He caught a swing pass in that game, and three guys had an angle on him, and he just outran them. Like, and he was like going down the sideline, and three guys had to angle on him to push him out of bounds and couldn't touch him. So that guy looks like Chris Johnson 2.0, at least from that highlight that I saw.
Yeah,
so
he looked freaky.
I just wanted to throw that out there. So going down the ESPN schedule, you're going to be thrilled to talk about this game. Texas welcomed in your Raging Cajuns, handed them a 38-18 loss. I just want to say one thing. In your absence last week, Zeke Palermo, who had helped kind of co-opt this podcast the last couple weeks, he acted like I was out of my mind for saying that you guys had very little chance to win this game, even though, like, I think this was the absolute wrong thing to happen, because the times that you guys win games like this is when a team that's bigger than you checks their schedule and goes, ah, who cares? Like, Iowa State going into last year when they played y'all probably looked at the schedule and went, oh, crap, we play LSU week one. And then they went, oh, wait, it's Louisiana. We don't have to practice that hard. Texas this year was not taking you guys lightly by any stretch. And that's not the type of way that you pull an upset against a team that recruits on the level of Texas.
Yeah. And, you know, I want to give 110% of credit to Texas. I mean, Sark had an absolutely phenomenal game plan, executed it perfectly. Bijan Robinson is just a next level freak. Hudson Card was very admirable in his collegiate debut. You know, completed 60-something% of his passes, 200 yards, a couple touchdowns. I mean,
I think Robinson got named like the national.
He was the national offensive player of the week. Yeah,
yeah.
I mean,
crazy.
The kid had 180 total yards of offense and two touchdowns. I mean, he was an animal. You know, from a Louisiana standpoint, which is obviously what everybody wants to hear on this podcast. You know, I thought our guys went out and competed. I didn't think that there was a lack of effort. I think there was a lack of game plan. I don't think that our coaching staff did the correct job in preparing our players. And, you know, I thought that there was, and obviously I'm not going to name drop anybody, but I thought there was, our offense really struggled to sustain a drive. And whether you credit that to Texas or you discredit that to Louisiana, you know, call it however you want. But I think the big problem was our defense had an admirable performance. Our defense played well, in my opinion. But when it came down to it, by the third quarter, I mean, dude, they were absolutely gassed just because the offense gave them no chance at a break. And so I think when that happens against a team like Texas, you're asking to lose by three scores.
I have one quick question for you kind of as we are wrapping up talking about this game. What percentage of this do you put on the fact that you guys lost three of your top running backs to the NFL?
None.
None?
Absolutely, like, none.
Elijah Mitchell, Trey Regis, all those guys, like, whatever. Yeah,
I mean those guys are huge pieces to what we've built here. But the glorious thing about that is when you have a program that establishes itself as a running offense, you get viable replacements. So, yeah, it's a huge blow that we lost Regis and Mitchell in our running back room. But at the same time, we filled those holes with freshmen. And then not to mention, we already had Chris Smith on the team last year. He's our starting back this year. Amani Bailey got touches last year. He was our backup Saturday. So, I mean, we have guys that can really dominate the rushing attack. The problem is we didn't use it. I mean, we only ran the ball 29 times. We only ran the ball 29 times.
For 2.6 yards per carry. Right. Although you can take out Levi Lewis's numbers, whatever, but I mean, those are the final stats.
Chris Smith averaged 5 yards a carry. Please tell me why he only carried the ball 11 times.
I mean, I don't want to relate it back to my team, but Kennedy conundrum. Like, why is a guy who averages 8 yards a touch not touching the ball more than 9 times in a football game?
God, our true freshman running back, his collegiate debut, averages 4.5 yards a touch. Only carries it 6 times.
Do you feel like the coaching staff, I mean, I see here, you know, Levi threw the ball 40 times. Do you feel like they had any sort of pressure to try to, I don't know, like Matt, like air it out, like really expose like Texas or something like that? Like, you guys didn't throw the ball at that kind of rate last year, right? So, I mean, I'm kind of wondering what's up with that.
I think it's a couple of things. I think number one, it's to keep Texas guessing, because obviously Texas expected us to be run heavy. In any opponent that we play this year is going to expect us to be run heavy. So I think it was a plan to keep Texas guessing, and I'm not against that. And I think the other thing is that we have a slew of receivers. I mean, Kyron Lacy, Errol Rogers Jr., Jalen Williams. We have a transfer from TCU in the name of John Stevens Jr., Dante Fleming. I mean, I can go on and on about our receiving room. And so I think it's just... It was just a mixture of both, but it's one of those things where you got to stick with what works. When you're rushing attacks getting 3, 4, 5 yards a carry, I mean, you got to keep pounding it until they stop you. I mean, don't get me wrong. If you look on paper, Levi Lewis's passing stats were fair. I mean, he completed 70% of his passes for 282 yards and a touchdown. But as a Cajuns fan who sat there, watched this game, dissected it, and then the next day sat there and watched it again. Offensively, I mean, point blank, we weren't good. We weren't.
Yeah. I mean, I remember that Iowa State game, and like the reason you guys beat them was because after a point, they were just so scared that you were going to run the ball again that passing was like,
yep. And you know when that was
in their minds.
And that was in the second half. We've always been a second half team, especially under Billy Napier. And so I sat there at halftime. I want to say we were down, I think it was 14-3 or 10-3, something like that. And I said, you know what? We're a second half team. No, I know what it was. It was 14-6 at halftime. We kicked field goal as time expired to make it 14-6. I said, we're only down a touchdown. I said, we're in good hands. We're a second half team. We're going to find a way to bounce back. And dude, our defense just couldn't catch a break.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think it was a comedy of errors. And then at the same time, you know, just you got to give credit to Texas. They're a much better football team than most people probably expected.
And Zeke and I talked about this last week. I think I had to remind people that Sarkisian wasn't fired from USC for being a bad head coach. He was fired for the off the field stuff,
right?
Like, and his like issues with addiction. It wasn't that he couldn't cut it. I mean, he was really good at Washington for a number of years.
He won a national title at Alabama.
Yeah.
Running their offense.
And then he goes and installs that pass heavy offense at Alabama that highlighted all those receivers that got drafted in the first round. So, yeah. I mean, people thought that it was like, you know, Sarkisian's going to be another Tom Herman or Charlie Strong going into Texas. And it's like,
this guy's
closer to like,
he's going to turn Texas around.
He's closer to like what Hugh Freeze is, yep. You know, like where it's like Hugh Freeze probably shouldn't be coaching. I mean, Sarkisian shouldn't have been the offensive coordinator for a team. He should have been a head coach.
Let's be honest. Had Hugh Freeze not charged escorts to his university credit card, who knows?
Him on his university sponsored cell phone.
Right. Who knows? Which, by the way, credit to Ole Miss. They looked phenomenal last night. Who knows where Ole Miss would be? I mean, you get a couple more years of Hugh Freeze running the show, they might be a top 10 program.
I think they would be what Florida is now.
Yeah, top 15 on the outside looking
in. And always fielding in the
conversations. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, credit to Texas for sure.
No question about it.
let's move on to the next game. This is another one we don't have to talk about very long because this one was ugly. Kentucky welcomed UL Monroe, who, boy, it's going to be an uphill battle for Terry Bowden.
I'll give them this. Terry Bowden, Rich Rodriguez, and his son Rhett. If those are your three key pieces in that offense, if you're a UL Monroe fan, and this is coming from a Cajuns fan, if you are a Monroe fan, keep the faith, give it time. You guys are going to be pretty good in the next couple of years.
Yeah, I mean, I think people just need to understand like how long it's going to take to
how long it takes for a head coach to make it his team.
Right.
Yeah, no question about it.
And coming off of, you know, even this past year, doing the recruiting stuff was weird still with COVID. Mm-hmm. So, you know, he may have not gotten to do as much recruiting as he wanted. Plus,
no, I mean, I'm not saying Monroe's going to be a world beater.
No, but I mean, like, he probably didn't even recruit half the guys that they got to commit, like, right, coming in. Because, I mean, when was he hired? Like, I don't remember when he was hired, but it was probably after the second signing period, which is now like the unofficial signing period, because the main one, it feels like, happens in December now. So I don't think he was hired by December, which is essentially when everybody signs. And then now February or March or whenever it used to be is now kind of like, all right, let's do some cleanup. Here are some guys that, right, you know, need to commit somewhere to go play. So I think he and Rich Rod definitely need some time. However, this game was ugly, but it was understandable. We knew, I mean, they didn't win a game last year, so how surprised could you really be?
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
Now, I will say Kentucky's quarterback absolutely shredded them. I mean,
yeah, Will Levis, was that his name?
Yeah.
Where was he?
367 and four touchdowns.
Where did he transfer from? Penn State?
I think he's a Penn State transfer.
Yeah.
Which is crazy because off topic really fast, Sean Clifford is absolutely terrible. So it's crazy that he couldn't beat Sean Clifford out for that job.
You think so? You don't like Sean Clifford?
Dude, I've never been impressed. Like Sean Clifford, all half of those Big Ten quarterbacks that get pumped up every year going into game one, Graham Mertz, Sean Clifford, all those guys, I've never been impressed by any of them.
See, I like Graham Mertz.
He was terrible last Saturday. He and Clifford were both terrible against each other last Saturday. It was like, I mean, they waited until the third quarter to score. They waited until the third quarter to score any points. And it wasn't that the defenses were that dominant. It was that these teams can't quit, like, tripping over their own feet. With that said, Kentucky, I mean, just controlled the game, did whatever they wanted. Obviously, they're typically a very run-heavy team, but who knows how much of that is due to the personnel that they've had at quarterback, aka not having a real quarterback and starting like a converted receiver for a lot of times, like Lynn Bowden. Right. So but yeah, I mean, UL Monroe to be down, to lose by five touchdowns and only throw the ball like 19 times,
yep, is bad.
It's tough. There's a lot of three and outs there, yeah, for sure.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Next game on the schedule, Army absolutely ripped apart Georgia State.
I didn't see this coming.
Like, no, God, no. I thought Georgia State would put up a game. I didn't think Georgia State would win.
Now, I will say Georgia State had three players out with COVID protocol issues, one being receiver Sam Pinckney. However, that does not make up a 33-point difference.
One receiver doesn't make you lose by five scores.
Right. Yeah, that's a 33-point difference. And this is exactly like this is why every time we preview Georgia State or we talk about Georgia State, even in season, why every time we talk about Quad Brown, I'm a little bit like pump the brakes just a tad, because you're always, there's going to be a game or two like this in here where you're, you know, you hype him up or whatever in the preseason and you're like, hey, this guy could be something. He's going to have a ton of years at Georgia State. And then he comes out and goes 12 of 20 for 129 and a pick. And right, you're just like, oh, maybe it's going to take longer than I thought.
Right. Right. I was like, just about to
clearly
say.
Clearly not finished product.
I was just about to say we hyped up Quad Brown all offseason, and now it's just like a.
I mean, maybe not. Like, I thought he was good for what he was, which, I mean, Georgia State definitely needs playmakers because clearly, I mean, their defense isn't going to be able to stop anybody still, probably. You know, it, just judging by the way this game went, they gave up 258 yards rushing. Now, that's a ton, and Army is a triple option team, which is really hard to prepare for, but this was kind of an issue with them last year. So, I think they're gonna do exactly what they did last year. They're gonna win one game that you think they absolutely shouldn't, or take a team like a Louisiana or a Coastal or whatever down to the wire in a game where they shouldn't be in it, and then they're gonna lose a game that they have no business losing. And that's just kind of become the MO. I mean, it is. And I thought they were gonna win this game, and I look like an idiot.
Right, right. You know, again, I'm with you. I thought that Georgia State would put up a fight against Army. I didn't think Army would lose. I thought Army would be the winner in that game. But I definitely didn't expect a 33-point defeat for the Panthers. You know, Brian, one game that you're going to want to talk about is Georgia Southern and Gardner-Webb. So Georgia Southern was the victor, 30-25. Logan Wright, great game, 26 carries, 178 yards, and a touchdown. However, it did take a goal line stand for you guys to be the victor. What happened?
I mean, they look like a team that was starting a backup running back at quarterback. That's essentially what happened. I mean, Amari Jones is not a quarterback. He hasn't played quarterback since high school. And you could kind of see the stats. I wrote this in my recap. If you just look at the raw stats, you'd go, wow, that was an explosive offense. Except if you watch the game, they would have one drive where they would go down and it would look like automatic. And then they would have another drive where it was like, okay, well, we have a backup running back playing quarterback. What we're going to do is throw the ball on first down, incomplete pass. We're going to run the ball at the middle on second down, gain of two. We're going to run the ball around the end on third and eight, and it's going to be fourth and four, and we're going to punt. So it's kind of deceiving. Like, there's not really a way to put that into words, like, unless you really watched it. But, I mean, offensively, even though they scored here was the other problem. Red zone offense, terrible. I mean, they could not convert in the red zone. They ended up kicking, I think, three or four field goals. So that needs to improve, like, yesterday. And the people that I've heard say, like, a win is a win, I'm kind of tired of hearing that, to be totally honest, because they did this last year with Campbell, and I gave them the benefit of the doubt because they had, like, 30 players out with COVID. All right, fine, whatever. I'll let it slide. This year, they had two impact players out that I'm aware of. J.D. King didn't play. Quarterback Justin Tomlin didn't play. And we knew he wasn't going to play. However, to do this whole, like, cloak and dagger thing with the quarterback position and not let anybody know who's playing until the first snap, and then to just come out and be, like, kind of dysfunctional looking, to be totally honest,
right,
is tough to swallow. However, Cam Ransom, the freshman.
Yeah, I was about to ask you.
Does not look like an option style quarterback, but I think it may be time to change the offense for someone of that caliber because dude can sling it. So if you need to convert this team to a traditional spread offense to make way for this guy, I think you have to do it. I don't think you can take a great quarterback who can really throw the ball and be like, well, if you can't run the option, it's time for you to transfer.
You heard it here, folks. Georgia Southern needs to change their offense.
I mean, I said this at the beginning of the season. If they're not going to compete for anything,
right,
they might as well run one of the freshmen out. And yeah, Ransom was the other guy besides Amari for Jones, sure, that got run out. Now, again, I don't know. Sam Kinnerson didn't play, so I don't know if he can run the option. Amari Jones is going to be a running back once Tomlin comes back.
Right.
So, I don't know, man. If this team's looking at five or six wins, I think they need to start curbing the offense towards, let's get three or four receivers out there and a tight end. let's run the ball. You know, we can do some creative things running the ball, but also we don't have to be married to this offense if it's going to sacrifice the chance for us to win actual games and get better with a freshman quarterback who showed some life in game one when a lot of players on this team did not, like the defense did not show any life.
no doubt about it. Cam Ransom, very impressive in week one for Georgia Southern. Another game that I thought was interesting, we don't have to spend too much time on it because I'm sure neither one of us watched it. Baylor and Texas State went down to the wire. Obviously, I saw the highlights. 29-20 Baylor over Texas State. Let me ask you this quickly. If Brady McBride doesn't throw three picks, does Texas State win that game?
Probably. I mean, Baylor has taken... I don't want to discredit the way that Texas State played because they kind of did the same thing to SMU last year in the opener. They kept it close in a game that no one really thought they were going to, but it you know, eventually spiraled out. Baylor has, as a program, is kind of circling the drain again a little bit. Like, I hate to say it, but Matt Rhule had them in the, what, Sugar Bowl playing Georgia like 3 years ago? Was it 2 or 3 years ago?
Right.
They're not good anymore. No. I mean, they kind of had it figured out with Rhule, and then he leaves to go to the Carolina Panthers, and now they're back at kind of square one with that team. So, I mean, yeah, if Brady McBride doesn't throw three picks, the other thing too, man, 50% completion percentage is nasty. Like, you can't do that and win a game against a Power Five school.
Yeah, no question about it. 2040 is not a impressive statistic nowadays. Arkansas State put on a clinic over Central Arkansas, 40-21. James Blackman, the Florida State transfer, got the start, 16-26 for 169 yards. But it was Lane Hatcher who took the stat line, 12-12 for 150 yards and 4 touchdowns, 3 of them to Corey Rucker, 9 catches, 138 yards and 3 scores. This is a nasty air raid offense in Jonesboro.
Did Lane Hatcher kick somebody's dog or something? Like, the last two head coaches that he's played under have been like, yeah, you're doing some nice things. Let's go with this other guy who's not as efficient.
Right.
And I don't know, like...
Let's go with the other guy who's eh.
Yeah, I mean, he may be, like, bad in practice or something like that. Like, I don't know what the issue is, but... This dude should be starting for them. Yeah. Like, I'm sorry. Like, Blackman, yeah, he went to Florida State, but he was not good at Florida State. So, and you could have chalked that up to the offensive line or whatever, but Hatcher at this point has more pedigree with this team than Blackman does. So, like, I don't really understand why Butch Jones and Blake Anderson have hated this guy so much.
Yeah, I don't get it. I would love for Lane Hatcher to be my quarterback. No offense to Levi Lewis, but I would love for Lane Hatcher to be my quarterback.
But, I would too. I'd love to not be starting a backup running back at quarterback right now. I'd take either of these guys.
Oh my God. Yeah, no doubt about it. Quickly wrapping up these last two games. Troy dismantles Southern of Baton Rouge 55-3. And then the Kane Womack era begins in Mobile with a bang. They beat Southern Miss 31-7. You know, Brian, pretty good week of Sunbelt football. You see only 1, 2, 3, 4 teams. 4 teams out of the 10 were losers. 6-4 week one. Not a bad place to be.
No, I just wanted to add something really quick. I had my doubts about Jake Bentley starting for South Alabama.
He had a good game.
I thought Desmond Trotter, like, probably should be the starting quarterback, but with a new coaching staff, they don't have any attachment to Desmond Trotter. They didn't recruit him. So, but yeah, he had a good game. And I think the important thing is, can he keep this up for a full season? And right, that'll be something we'll have to see.
All right, let's do this. Let's do week two. We will tell you the game, where it's being played, and the line. And Brian, you tell me if you're buying it or not. Friday night.
Well, I'm buying this first one.
Friday night, Kansas, Coastal Carolina from Brooks Stadium in Conway, South Carolina. Coastal is a 25.5 point favorite. You buying it?
Yes. Yeah. Kansas barely got away with beating an FCS team in South Dakota last week, 17-14. Yeah. This team still hasn't recovered from whatever happened with Les Miles, that they mutually parted ways or whatever the situation was. I don't even know who their head coach is, to be totally honest with
you.
Me
neither.
Not that it matters. I mean, it's Kansas football. But yeah, I think Coastal has, these two teams are on complete opposite trajectories. Like Coastal is close to competing for like a top 15 spot in the rankings, and Kansas is closer to discontinuing their football program than anything else. So
yeah.
give me the points all day. I mean, I think Coastal averaged close to like 38 points per game last year.
Yeah,
something like that.
Something wild.
So, I mean, they just scored 52. I know it was an FCS team, but Kansas is basically an FCS team.
Speaking of Kansas and FCS teams, Louisiana has a game against Nicholls, who beat Kansas just a few short years ago.
Yep.
Cajun Field, 6 o'clock on ESPN3. Obviously, there is no money line due to the fact that the Cajuns are playing an FCS opponent. Who you got?
What? What do you mean?
Well, hey, I mean, it's an honest question. Nicholls? Nicholls is not
Louisiana.
Bad.
Louisiana. Hold on, let me flip a coin.
Huh? It's an honest question. It's an honest question.
Louisiana.
All right, easy. Saturday at 2:30, Georgia Southern and Florida Atlantic. This one is from FAU Stadium. FAU is a 7-point favorite. Do your Eagles get it done, Brian?
I don't know if they win, but I think they cover the spread. I don't know. I had heard a lot of the narrative since the Gardner Webb game last week that they were running a vanilla playbook on purpose because when it was an FCS team and they ended up barely beating that team. However, I saw FAU play Georgia Southern last year, and Georgia Southern ran out of backup, which was Tomlin, for that game, and they couldn't barely cross the 50-yard line. So I think it'll be close. I do think FAU will win just because they actually have a real quarterback back there and they aren't kind of starting like a substitute teacher at quarterback.
Right.
But I think it's going to be like a 3 or 4 point win for the Owls. Like if we had an actual quarterback back there, I think I would say we would win, but I can't trust like this weird mishmash of guys.
So if Cam Ransom plays, do you win?
That's another contingency because they're trying to fit a square peg into a round hole with him. He's not your traditional Shai Wirtz style player. I mean, he's closer to like a pocket QB than anything else. I mean, he can really throw it, but if you're going to try to make him run a speed option sweep to the left side, it's probably not going to happen. So if they run an offense that's more conducive to what he's good at, then yeah. But if they start him and try to run, you know, read option and all this crazy stuff, like every play, it's just not going to work. So that's my contingency. But I mean, but starting Amari Jones, nah. I watched him play. It was like, he looked like a guy that hadn't played quarterback since high school. Right. So, I mean, I think FAU wins.
South Alabama and Bowling Green. South Alabama, 14.5-point favorite.
I don't know anything about Bowling Green, to be honest. Do you?
Well, I'll tell you this. They lost their first game to Tennessee, 38-6.
Yeah, but, I mean, that's not surprising. I think I'll take South Alabama in the points. They looked good last week against Southern Miss. I don't know that Bowling Green is that different from Southern Miss on a talent perspective. I thought, you know, Jake Bentley looked good. They've got a couple of receivers that are very talented. Kane Womack, they played much improved defense last week. Only allowed 7 points. So, yeah, give me the Jaguars.
Hey, I'm about it. I agree. I think South Alabama is going to take care of business. And, you know, one game I've been looking at for a while now is this App State Miami game down in Miami. Miami listed as a 9-point favorite right now. Man, I'm taking App plus 9.
This is a tough one for me because I have two trains of thought here. Number one is Derek King did not look good in week one.
No. Granted, he played Alabama. So
he played Alabama.
Cut him some slack.
He's coming off of an injury to end last season. I don't know if he's 100% with his ACL. But the other train of thought that I have is, how pissed off is Miami going to be that they just got mollywopped in game one? And see, this would, if that game last week was even remotely close, I think that App would have a chance to pull an upset. However, I think they're just like, we cannot go out and get embarrassed again. Like, Miami is like, we at least have to show that we can beat this G5 team. You know what I mean? You don't want to, a trap game typically doesn't happen coming off of a loss. So I think I'll take Miami. It's a very tentative, like, I'll take Miami, but because, like I said, Derek King did not look himself last week, but I think it's going to be hard to pull an upset against a team that just got absolutely smacked last week.
FIU, Texas, 1 point in favor of the Panthers.
I think I'll take Texas State in this one. I think they played pretty impressively against Baylor, even though, like I said, I don't think Baylor's that great of a football program any longer, but they are a P5 school. And I need to figure out, I'm looking at this team that Florida Atlantic played. Long Island University is who they played last
LIU. Week. LIU, yeah.
Never heard of them. So I will take Texas State just based on the fact that they played an actual football team that I've heard of last week.
Yeah. No, I'm with you. I'll take the Bobcats as well. You see, this next game, Saturday night, is going to be interesting. Liberty and Troy. I believe they're playing they're at Troy. Liberty is a 4.5-point favorite on the road. I don't know about you, Brian, but I'm taking Troy.
I'm taking Liberty. They were dogs last year. I mean, you saw it in the bowl game. They beat Coastal Carolina.
Thank God.
Malik Willis is a monster back there. I've already heard like rumblings that he might be play himself into a first round draft pick like late in this year's draft, just because this year is so starved on like quarterback talent. I mean, teams need quarterbacks all over, and you know, Sam Howell didn't impress anybody last week, so they're already starting to fade him, and Rattler's the only guy who's kind of locked in to be a top pick. So the rest of the country's kind of looking at Malik Willis, Carson Strong, like, are these guys going to come in and kind of take the spot of Sam Howell? But I think I like Liberty. I mean, I think they have a better head coach. I think they have a better quarterback overall. They were really good last year, and I don't think they're overlooking anybody this season. So give me Liberty.
Memphis, Arkansas State. Memphis is currently a 5-point favorite, and this game is being played in Jonesboro.
I think I'll take Arkansas State.
Agreed.
Memphis has not really looked like the same team since Mike Norvell moved on. It was kind of the same deal for a little bit with Fuentes moving on. And so,
man, if you haven't learned yet, play Lane Hatcher.
But they won't. I mean, they'll put him in a time. I don't know if like these contracts for Arkansas State are like signed in blood and they're forced to play two quarterbacks, right. But like,
Oh my God.
I don't understand the multi-quarterback system and why they're so committed to it.
It never works. It never works.
Yeah, and it worked last week because you played Central Arkansas, but like, I don't understand how you look at that guy's stat line and go, I'd rather play the less efficient passer.
Please tell me a time where a dual quarterback system worked.
Well, that's the other thing is like, so they run an air raid. Okay. Who's the better raw passer?
Like Lane take Hatcher. All.
Exactly. So why not just play him? Right. If you're running some kind of crazy scheme where you need
Blackman,
your quarterback to be.
Because Blackman came from a program like Florida State. That's why.
And that'll get you in trouble. You can't just like hang your hat on that.
Yep. No, 100%. Think about all the programs that have played guys because, you know, they were fifth string at Alabama or, you know, whatever. I mean, it 9 times out of 10, it doesn't work for you.
Yeah. So I think I like Arkansas State. I mean, I hope they play the right quarterback and make me look good. Right. But if James Blackman goes out there and completes, you know, 55% of his passes and Memphis scores 31 points and Arkansas State can't play any defense, then I'm going to look dumb. But I hope Lane Hatcher plays, and I'm taking the Red Wolves.
Yeah, yeah, no question about it. Last game of the weekend for the Sun Belt, Georgia State is going to be in Chapel Hill to take on the number 24 UNC Tar Heels. 25.5 in favor of the Heels. I'm taking that and then some.
I really don't like picking the line on this one. If I was like a betting person, and if betting was legal in Kentucky outside of horse racing,
which we're gonna have to have a conversation about one day because that makes
I'll never be able to. I'll never be able to rationalize. It doesn't make a lick of sense. Other than the fact that like the company that owns Churchill Downs like basically like is probably blocking sports betting from getting legalized. But that's neither here nor there. So I'm looking at it. Here's my concern for each side. Let me know if I'm off base. North Carolina, I said on last week's podcast, or maybe it was with you, I can't remember. I said it on a previous podcast. I was worried about them losing their weapons to the NFL draft. Daz Newsome, Javonte Williams, Michael Carter, Dyname Brown, all those guys. They made me look like a million bucks because they played like crap against Virginia Tech last Friday. So that's my concern with taking 25.5 is it's just Sam Howell and the dudes. Like, right. It's just a bunch of dudes. Okay. My other concern is that Georgia State just got beat by 33 against Army. If they can't defend against Army or score more than 10 points, I don't care how many players you have out with COVID. Like, I don't feel good about picking you even plus 25.5 because you just lost by 33.
For sure.
I think if you put a gun to my head, I'd have to take North Carolina. I mean, they're a better program, better coach, better quarterback. They're going to be mad coming off of that loss to Virginia Tech. Sam Howell's probably going to be mad because he looked like crap in that game. But I wouldn't bet it and feel great about it.
Yeah, I mean, again, I'm going to take North Carolina just from, you know, it's Sam Howell. And I think that they're going to be an angry group after the performance they had against Virginia Tech. And I think anger is going to turn into momentum and good play on the field. I feel the same way about the Cajuns from a Louisiana standpoint. I think they're going to take the anger of not showing up as well as they should have against Texas, and they're going to use that to their advantage against Nicholls.
So I have a question for you, and I know we talked about this in the preseason preview. Okay. We had some expectations for Georgia State. We weren't through the roof about them.
Right.
If they get rocked again in week two.
Oh, I'm out the door. And then
they play Charlotte week three. And they
out the door on Georgia State.
Hypothetically, they lose a close one. They could start the season 1-5.
Yeah.
And we thought that they were going to be contenders. Maybe not to that extent, but like we thought they were going to do something. And 1-5, man, woof.
Yeah, buddy. Atlanta is not a good place to be right now. I mean, Georgia State, the Falcons.
Gross. Even their conference schedule is ugly. I mean, there's a couple of layups on the schedule. You think Monroe, Texas State. But then you end the season with, you know, Georgia Southern, Louisiana Coastal, Arkansas State, Troy.
Yikes.
It's like at this point, and I know that we're back only one
half,
game in.
That back half of the schedule sounds brutal right about now.
And I know we're only one game in, but do you feel confident that they're going to win any of the, I mean, maybe the Georgia Southern game because we don't know what we're doing, but do you feel confident about any of those games?
Those last five?
Yeah.
Oh, God, no. Even Troy runs amok on them.
Yeah.
I mean,
so they get a break. Oof. They get a break after this North Carolina game by playing Charlotte. Then they have to go play Auburn the week after.
Is Charlotte really a break?
Well, I said break in like, I don't think you saw it. I did air quotes.
Oh, air quotes. Break. Okay, I was about to say.
But then I said they have to go play Auburn the week after that.
I was about to say, is Charlotte much of a break? They're not bad.
I mean, compared to Army, North Carolina, and Auburn, it is.
Who did Charlotte just beat? Duke. I mean, obviously Duke's not great, but they beat Duke.
Yeah. I mean, they beat a P5 school.
Right.
So, I mean, Now, that's what I said. So they're starting the season. They could start 0-4.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, the way that they played last week, they could start 0-4 and then maybe 1-5 just beating Louisiana Monroe.
Oh, yeah. It's nasty, bro.
And we thought that they were going to be somewhat improved. But like I said, you know, the schedule's brutal and they completely, you know, messed up week one. So we don't know what we're getting out of the Panthers this year.
Atlanta, Georgia State's going to be interesting. Just hang on to see what's going to happen with that program. Brian, before we go, man, tell everybody where they can find you on social media.
Yeah, so everybody can find me on Twitter at Watch the Stone.
You can find me on Twitter at Miguez Matt, both M's capitalized. Next week, we will break down the games in week two and preview week three, as well as give you any new pertinent information regarding the Sun Belt Conference and its conference members. We hope you enjoyed this episode of Underdog Dynasty's Sun Belt Podcast, and we'll talk to you next time.